I'm talking to Nick Jakowicz, CEO of Hydrosum Labs. Nick and his team have developed a new bubble technology which he thinks could revolutionise fermentation. Hydrosum Labs are unlocking the potential of these nanobubbles to enhance efficiency and productivity in fermentation. From brewing to biopharma, precision fermentation, and perhaps even in cellular agriculture, Hydrosum Labs believes these microscopic bubbles are a game changer. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to the latest episode of Future of Foods Interviews, which you can follow on YouTube, Substack, and all podcast platforms. Please subscribe where you can. Okay, so thank you to Nick Jakowicz, who is the Chief Scientific Officer at Hydrosum Labs. And you have some very interesting new technology there involving very tiny bubbles, which by all accounts help the efficiency inside a bioreactor. So I was wondering if you could just explain your breakthrough technology a little bit. What are ultrafine bubbles?
Absolutely. Yeah, Alex, thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate being here. So we're talking about something called ultrafine bubbles. And a lot of people obviously haven't heard of this. Sometimes it's called nanobubbles. But if you can imagine a champagne bubble that you have in your champagne flute, and you look in at that, and it's about, you know, call it a millimeter or so in diameter, we can fit 100 trillion, rather 1 trillion, sorry, inside of that bubble, of that champagne bubble, are little ultrafine bubbles. So we're talking about scales here that are pretty hard even to wrap your head around. The size of the bubbles typically are around 100 nanometers. And so for most, you know, that doesn't mean anything. But to put it in perspective, that's the size of a virus particle. So something very, very small. And that's what these bubbles are, really small particles that have existed for a long time. If you go back and look in literature and see where this has its roots, you'll find some papers starting in Japan back, you know, really starting to take off in the 80s and some earlier work in the 60s, but really establishing itself there. So that's sort of the home of ultrafine bubble technology. And so they're these really small bubbles. They are so small that they do not float. So we all think about bubbles. We see them rise in our beer, container, or we see them in our sparkling water. But imagine a bubble that's so small that it doesn't float. It's not governed by buoyancy because it's so tiny. It's governed by something called Brownian motion, which just means sort of random movement throughout a liquid. Okay. And so that means,
Okay, so the bubble has nothing inside it then, I assume. Right.
Correct. So it is just a bubble in you know, the, in all sense of the word, where it's a void in the middle, so filled with gas, and there's really nothing on the surface in terms of a chemical that we're adding. So this bubble is made through our technology, through force and pressure, and it's really using the chemistry in the water to hold that bubble together. So yeah, there's no nothing inside of it, only the gas that's in the liquid. That's what goes inside of that bubble.
Okay, and so why is this important? I did see a video of Cindy Crawford talking about Hydrosum H2O, saying that it helps the ingredients get deeper inside the skin. So how is this effective in precision fermentation, for example?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So again, imagine these bubbles. There's a lot of them. We can make, you know, millions and billions of these bubbles per milliliter, right? So there's lots of them in there. And again, they're so small, they don't float. They're so small, you can't see them with the naked eye. So you'll look at a container that may have ultrafine bubbles in it, and it will look clear. The way we have sophisticated technology to measure that, but a simple way to look at it is you shine a laser through that liquid. And without ultrafine bubbles, that laser goes through, you don't really see much scattering of the light. But with a ultrafine bubble mixture, you see a very intense scattering of that light, and you can see something is in there. And so these bubbles, again, are incredibly tiny and very numerous. What that means is massive surface area. So there's a lot of area there where these bubbles can interact both chemically and biologically. So, for example, in the fermentation space, we're noticing differences as it pertains to something called mass transfer. So that's the movement of different solutes. So say things like nutrients and minerals to cells, as well as the gas that's inside of the bubble. So if we can give cells the things that they need more effectively, then they're going to be happier and they're going to grow better, faster, and produce the things they want to produce. And that's at HydroSum, a lot of what we're looking into is this emerging field of ultrafine bubbles combined with microbiology. And how can we really enhance that process naturally? Again, these are bubbles, no chemicals being added here, just a bubble to help with the kinetics of a fermentation. And so that's what we're really interested in here, is really pushing those boundaries, understanding how we can tailor that bubble concentration to really move, cells in ways that they grow more efficiently, and learn more about how, different bubbles and sizes and concentrations can affect different types of cells. Obviously, we know in fermentation, there's lots of different types that people use, from yeast and bacteria and fungi and even mammalian cells in some cases. So how do you tailor ultrafine bubble formulation for those different applications? And that's what we're really interested in here, and we're seeing some really good data so far.
So which applications have you tested it in so far?
Yeah, so classically, I guess, I mean, I'll back up to the ultrafine bubble technology has been used heavily, more heavily, I guess, in agriculture, growing plants more effectively with these bubbles, really, again, driving mass transfer to the roots. So watering with these ultrafine bubbles and getting benefits there. Wastewater treatment, so you're seeing people help flocculate and clean up waste streams that way. Also in aquaculture, so growing fish more effectively, again, through mass transfer. We're pushing into to new areas as well where it hasn't been employed before. When you think about it, the application areas for ultrafine bubbles are really endless. There's so many things you can do. And at HydroSum, we're really tailored into a few ones, which is, again, fermentation, cosmetics, and then even a bit onto the beverage side. So that's where we really focus in, and we're highly tuned into those areas to really bring the benefits there and establish ourselves in those key categories.
So, have you used this technology in brewing, for example?
Yeah, we have some collaborators right now, in fact, in that are doing some work with brewing, where we're looking at, again, that mass transfer, that movement, and helping, in this case, alcoholic fermentation, so an anaerobic process with the bubbles. And again, we're seeing benefits there, where we're seeing faster fermentation times and healthier cells as well, so better viability at the end of the day. And so that's really been beneficial, but we see benefits in all kinds of fermentation. So we look across aerobic ones as well, ones that deal with aerobic yeast like Pichia or E. coli that have been genetically modified to produce different molecules of interest. So obviously, precision fermentation is a vast and growing field, and we see ourselves as enablers of more precision fermentation and more efficiency, and really trying to help, again, drive those solutes, those different nutrients in solution to the cells, but also the gases that are inside of it. Especially, this is important in aerobic fermentation. If we're able to increase that efficiency of the oxygen uptake rate, then that's obviously very beneficial to cells that need oxygen, because that's usually a limiting factor in aerobic fermentation. So if we can boost that, now there's more energy for that cell. It can grow faster and better, and that's what we're seeing in a lot of cases. So mechanistically, as a scientific community, we're still learning a lot about how these bubbles interact at that molecular level, at that, microscopic level. But we're seeing the benefits, and it's a really fascinating area. Lots to learn for sure.
Yeah, so you said that that the bubbles are created using a sort of pressure technology. So I mean how I'm not going to ask you to sort of go into too much detail about how it's created because I'm not sure how much you want people to know about that. I mean, are you able to sort of give us a little bit of a
Yeah,
rundown how it works?
of course. Yeah, so we use principles of something called hydrodynamic cavitation. It's a fancy word for saying that we run liquids through our piece of equipment, our technology, which is able to actually pull out the entrained gases that are dissolved in the liquid. So for example, you have in water in your home, you have gases dissolved in that water, which are mainly oxygen and nitrogen. So imagine we put that water through our tech, we're pulling out those dissolved gases, and then through these very finely tuned physical forces inside our technology, we're able to crash back those gases into solution. And in doing so, they form these ultrafine bubbles. So we can flow different liquids. So water is one example, but say in a fermentation, we can flow the media broth and the cells through the technology. We can take that dissolved oxygen, that dissolved gas that's in that media, and essentially repackage it into ultrafine bubbles. So make it into, I may call it a more efficient way of moving nutrients and a more efficient way of moving gases to cells. And so that's, at the end of the day, what we're all about and looking to do. And so we in commercial practice, we take that technology, for example, in fermentation, and we again hook it up to a fermentation tank where we have a fermentation going. Imagine yeast or bacteria that are making a certain product, and we're pulling out that liquid, again, that media and those yeast or bacteria, pulling them through our tech, infusing ultrafine bubbles, and then putting the bubbles back in the tank. And we do that continuously. And that way, we're able to keep adding more bubbles as they're consumed, and we're able to keep increasing the concentration of bubbles so we have more surface area. So we have more area for interaction, and we have more benefit to that fermentation. So that's how we commercialize. That's how we work in the fermentation space, is finding partners that are looking for efficiency gains and titer gains and yield gains. And we add on our technology that we customize to their tank size, and then we infuse the bubbles that way. So it's a very efficient process. Again, no chemicals that we need, and the power that is needed is very low because we're just using some pumps. Our equipment itself has no moving pieces, and so it's very energy efficient. It takes about 2 cents worth of electricity to flow 400 liters, so it's quite low in terms of those demands. So it's really nice for the
Okay,
fermentation application.
so are you offering the technology? Because I suppose for lots of applications in this field, people are not certain how it's going to help. I mean, obviously you kind of tell them how it's going to help, but would you be offering this technology on a trial basis to see to see how it affects people's product?
That's exactly it, Alex. 100%. I think that's a lot of the conversations that we have, like we're having right now. This, introducing people to ultrafine bubbles, it's new for 95% of people we talk to, and it seems, again, even a bit ludicrous that a bubble can do all this work. But we have lots of evidence and lots of publications behind it. So yeah, we definitely work with different prospective clients to have them try the technology and even try the water. In fact, too, where we can take water, we can infuse it with ultrafine bubbles, and then we can ship it because these bubbles are so stable. They don't float. They're stable for many, many months. We can ship the water, and they can use that on their end. So they can do a fermentation using the water with the bubbles. All they do is add in nutrients. They can autoclave it. It can handle an autoclave sterilization cycle. Then they inoculate their cells, and they can see if they have a difference between that water with the bubbles in it and then the regular water without. And so we can start there as a proof of concept, and then we have test skids that we can send out as well, where people can get the added benefit of having recirculation, where again, there's a lot more bubbles being added, and so we see even bigger gains that way. So it's definitely a case by case basis because everybody has unique fermentations, and so we've seen, with certain cell lines, we have confidence that we're seeing benefits, but every case is unique. And so definitely the trial aspect of this is really important to make sure people are seeing some benefit for their process.
So, are there any, are there any potential risks involved if people use this technology? Have you seen anything go wrong?
I'm not saying this, that we haven't, to be honest. Like we've noticed, in some fermentations that there's different benefits depending on what kind of cell is being used and what kind of process is being used. So there it varies in terms of gains. So maybe some people might not see the gains that they would have liked to have seen, but generally the gains are meaningful, and a lot of people are happy. We haven't seen any issues. For example, a big question we get a lot is around cell lysis or cell disruption, because again, we're flowing those cells and that media through our tech, And there is some shear forces that are applied inside of that text. People say, hey, have you seen, cells dying because they go through there? And we haven't. We've tried various strains of yeast and bacteria that are commercially used, and the viability remains strong. In fact, in some cases, the viability goes up after it goes through the text. So again, so far we haven't noticed those issues. Again, the bubbles, react really well biologically, but when filled with air or oxygen, they're fairly inert. And so we don't see other issues in the tank in terms of, say, hyperoxidation or any issues there. Downstream processing, once people are finished their fermentation, they're bubbles and they can be easily removed through freeze-thaw cycles or just through even filtration can remove them very, very, very simply. So far it seems to be pretty adaptable, and we haven't seen any major issues so far.
Okay, so in the little video with Cindy Crawford, where she said that it helps the ingredients get deeper inside the skin, can you exp I mean, is that just sort of advertising spin, or is that something that actually happens?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's sort of our second leg of the company in terms of the application area that we're really pioneering is cosmetics and active ingredient delivery. And so I can say it's certainly not a marketing spin. We work with a lot of different collaborators, and in particular, a group out of New Jersey called TRI Princeton. And they have very sophisticated models for testing the permeation of different active ingredients. So what we'll do is we'll work with them, and they can actually use what's called excised pieces of human skin that has been donated or has been taken for medical procedures. We can test on real pieces of skin and put a formulation containing ultrafine bubbles on one piece of skin and then one without. And we can look with various types of techniques and look at the movement of those active ingredients. And we have really strong data showing that the movement is much deeper and faster with the ultrafine bubbles in there. And again, we're looking at mechanistically how that occurs. Some of the theories and hypotheses revolve around the bubbles really, again, acting as these small micro carriers, helping shuttle and move these different actives into the skin deeper without having to add any other chemicals or other penetrating agents. So something very natural and something very clean. And that's something that a lot of our clients are very cognizant of, having a clean label as well. And so we continue to test a lot in that space, and we have, again, good scientific data to back that up. It's still emerging field as well, and so we're learning lots, but so far that's been a very effective way and to move, again, actives into the skin and
Yeah.
people into that.
So how did you come up with the idea for this technology?
It
It's
was, yeah. I think the history of it goes back, and it's a very long story. But the CliffsNotes version of it is that we, as a team, when this was found, the founder of the company, a fellow by the name of Chris Edmonds, had collaborators and partners that had this technology originally and would anecdotally see things that were just very intriguing, especially on the agriculture side. Against they would use water that had been flowed through this device and saw benefits in growing plants. They would see anecdotal evidence around people in hydration with this water as well. And so there was something that was going on here. And again, because ultrafine bubble technology is so new, again, it really has only burst onto the scene in a meaningful way in the last 10 years. It just wasn't on people's radar. So you would look at this water, you would test it chemically all different kinds of ways and say, hey, there's nothing in here. The density looks the same. There's nothing other chemical I see in here. There's no other reactive radical species or anything else in here. So what is it? And it just wasn't on people's radar until we started looking at this phenomenon more closely. And really the scientific equipment has gotten much better to measure it too. So we had better tools. And once we could look at that level and screen for it, they were there. And it's fascinating. And so that's we've really pinned a lot of our, that's the essence of a technology at this point. Early on, it wasn't widely known, but now it's ultrafine bubbles, and there's just a lot, that it can do. So it's really exciting.
And how new is Hydrosome as a company? Are you relatively new?
Yeah, the company dates back to about 2019 when it was kind of incorporated and reorganized. And so it goes back again to about 5 years or so. I'd say in the last, year and a half, couple of years, we really had a bigger push again into the ultrafine bubble space. and are really expanding the team. So we're now about 15 people, headquartered out of Chicago, and folks that are scattered around the US. But we have a growing team, and again, a more renewed focus on areas that are a bit different and atypical from other ultrafine bubble companies, again, that are more focused in agriculture and wastewater treatment, where we see a lot of upside and benefits in the fermentation, in cosmetics, and as I mentioned too, in beverage and food, which is my background. I'm a food scientist by training, and I'm really excited about them in the food space because imagine, again, you can fill a bubble with different gases. So that's something we're actively looking at too. We've talked a lot about already bubbles filled with air or maybe oxygen for fermentation, but imagine you could tailor that composition of the gas inside the bubble to whatever you like. So for example, in a beverage, we all try carbonated beverages before, and they're obviously widely known, but what if you could make ultrafine bubbles with CO2? What does that taste like? How does that affect mouthfeel? How does that affect other flavors, and organoleptics and things like that? So there's a lot of active research and a lot of companies that have come to us wanting to partner and do more studies in that space because it's fascinating. There's certain gases that we can look at that impart a bit of sweetness. And so imagine if you're a company that's very cognizant of trying to reduce the calories or added sugars to a beverage, and now you can play with ultrafine bubbles and be able to reduce the amount of sugar you add to a beverage, right? I mean, that's a win-win for everybody. And again, because they have such longevity, you have these bubbles that can persist after bottling, which is fascinating. So there's a lot of interest in that space, and our team, engineering team and R&D team, are really gearing up to explore, fully explore the idea of different gases and what that brings, certainly to food and beverage and in lots of different spaces too. But we're really excited about that and what that offers.
Yeah. So you're interested in going into the precision fermentation space, which you say is quite a growing industry, but it's also a very new industry, isn't it? They are probably open to the idea of trying new technology because they are themselves quite a new technology. Have you thought about have you considered the area of cultivated cells of sort of cellular agriculture and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to folks in lots of different areas, certainly in cultivated meat, for example, where different types of cell lines, for example, mammalian cells are being cultivated and used. And again, we think there's benefits here in driving, nutrients and say oxygen to those cells more effectively. So we're actively working in that space with a lot of them and gearing up for our own internal R&D to be able to handle that. Again, that one is again even more on the cutting edge of what's happening too. So I think some of those folks have very clear and maybe secretive ways of doing things. So there's some of the collaborations are a bit more tricky, but definitely we're seeing interest across many fields. And then even, we work with some people in the biomedical field too that are really interested in ultrafine bubbles, bringing this to things like drug delivery and moving drugs and active ingredients to cells that need it, these medicines, using on the back of a bubble and moving them through, and then again, like popping them using, say, ultrasound or different methods at the site. So you have not a systemic effect of that drug, but a more targeted effect too. So again, we're seeing it from all angles, and there's just so much potential, I think, for this tech.
Yeah, I mean, clearly in this industry, they are looking for any kind of technology that might give them an edge, or that might speed up the process, or to bring the cost down, obviously, because it's a very expensive.
And that's just it. I think that's what we kind of bring is you mentioned precision fermentation being so new, and so they're up against a lot of things. Like cost parity, as you mentioned, is a big thing. So if we can make them more efficient, that is, reducing the overall fermentation time, so they can do more fermentations overall, increasing their yield, so they can make more with each fermentation. I mean, that's a big deal for those folks, and that's what we kind of strive for in that space. So that's what we're seeing, and then couple that with the fact that precision fermentation again is so new and is growing rapidly. So right now, the infrastructure is needs to be upgraded massively, and there's just not enough for the projected volume that we're going to reach. So again, that's where efficiencies and yield increases come into play. So if you only have a limited amount of tanks, you want to get as much as you can out of them. And again, that's where we come in to help that industry.
So, I mean, it's been quite a difficult period, I suppose, for fundraising, certainly in the food space. I suppose your space isn't necessarily food. It's a broader technology. So have you found it quite easy to raise funds to finance the project, or have you had complications?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the space, as you point out, especially in food, we've definitely seen a lot of VC firms and the like sort of shy away from some of the fermented type foods because, again, cost parity and some of the headwinds there are kind of prohibitive. So that's definitely been a factor. But again, as you mentioned, we straddle lots of different industries, not just food, and so precision fermentation is rapidly growing. There's a lot of interest there in what that can bring and the different types of molecules that can be made, not just synthetically through chemistry or harvested, say, in remote areas of the world, but can be made reliably with fermentation. So that continues to get a lot of traction. Our investor base is very broad and very active. And so we have a lot of angel investors and folks that have been with the company for since its inception. And they're strong believers in the tech. So we have a really great base of supporters and advisors that are behind this company and really, keep us moving forward as we push towards, more commercialization and profitability. So the company is already, commercialized at this point, again, in the cosmetic space and close in the fermentation space as well. And again, our business model is such that, it doesn't take much to hit profitability. So we're looking good and just, really just trying to build that organically at this point.
Okay, and are you currently at profitability?
Company still, yeah, is still new enough in the fermentation space where we're not. So we're building towards that right now. And again, using our dollars right now in R&D and just getting out the education and with our sales force to really help build this and tell the story. So it's moving in a really great direction. The reaction we tell and talk to different folks about this technology is very positive. And so our main thing that we face right now is really just the testing time and just moving through that with different clients because they like the concept, they like the idea. It's just now they want to see if it works for them and their fermentation, and that takes a little bit of time, but it's moving in a really rapid and good direction.
Okay, so where do you see yourself? What are your projections, the next 5 years or 10 years? Where do you see yourself?
Yeah, I think really growing and expanding on the application areas. So again, as a startup, we need to be smart with where we're focused and where our time is. Again, that's where we put a lot of emphasis on fermentation and cosmetics in the food and beverage industry. But there's a lot more that we could be looking into, and that's where things like, again, modifying bubble concentration size and the gas type really opens up a whole plethora of applications. So we think about different areas. Like we've done some work in sort of the kind of functional ingredient space, looking at the microbiomes. This is obviously a really interesting space for a lot of companies that are trying to increase functionality of, say, beverages or foods. We've done some preclinical work showing modifications of the gut microbiome using ultrafine bubbles. So just by drinking water, everything else being the same, we're modifying that in a positive way. We're seeing reduction in inflammatory markers and increases in short chain fatty acids, which are a positive health marker in the gut. So there's a lot of new applications coming on board. We're also very bullish on sanitation. So using these bubbles again with different compositions, so say things like carbon dioxide or ozone, and really in boosting the effects of them in combination with sanitizing or cleaning agents. And so kind of a yin and yang situation where in some cases, depending on the composition of the bubble and the size, we can promote growth. But on the other hand, if we change that gas composition, we could potentially inhibit it. And we're really excited about that too. Again, doing this type of sanitation in a more economically or environmentally friendly way, really boosting it that way. So that's really got us interested, but it all comes back to how can we, harness this technology? How can we, again, make different types of bubbles, different concentrations, and really put them to work in different spaces? You'll see a lot more work coming out of this space too, if you watch the literature, and especially in the biomedical fields too. There's a ton of potential there. It just has a long lead time because of the sort of regulatory hurdles and scientific hurdles there. But you're going to see a lot of work continuing in that space. And
Yeah.
yeah, we're really excited to be a part of that.
So what kind of regulatory hurdles? I mean, is this I was wondering how complicated the technology is. Is this something that people could do quite easily, or have you sort of patented it so it cannot be used?
Yeah, so definitely we have patents that protect us and the technology design and then the bubbles that come out of that design and then different application areas where we use it. So we make the bubbles in a unique way, which again allows us to really tailor the size of the bubbles and the concentration. A unique aspect of our technology is really making bubbles that are smaller than generally are noted in the field. So typically, ultrafine bubbles are a couple hundred, 200, 300 nanometers, where a lot of ours are even below 50 nanometers. So they're very, very small, and this gives them different properties and added benefits, like mass transfer and movement of different nutrients in a more effective way. So we have those benefits, and those are patented that we look at.
So I mean, it's quite an interesting day there in the USA, isn't it, today? I wonder whether the new presidency might have any impact on the growth of business. I mean, have you had any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think not yet. It's hard to say, obviously, what will play out. We work with a lot of a few government grant agencies, right? So we look at things like the National Science Foundation, Department of Defense, NIH, things like that, right? So obviously the federal government has a big role to play in how those are funded. And so potentially there could be some impacts there in how those agencies see funding for different ventures that we may be a part of. That's something we'll keep an eye on, certainly. But yeah, it's hard to speculate at this point, but we're cautiously optimistic, I guess, at
I mean,
this point.
you were talking about regulatory hurdles. I mean, certainly in the world of sort of cultivated meats and fish, it's stalled somewhat in the USA, hasn't it, over the last couple of years. After a sort of positive beginning, it then stalled. I'm not sure how up to mark you are with the world of sort of cultivated foods and that sort of thing, but do you foresee yourselves playing a big role in that industry?
We hope to, right? I think a lot of it is collaboration driven, and so we've been working with a lot of folks in different areas there, and people at, say, the Good Food Institute, who have a lot of connections, and we've done some podcasts with them as well. But definitely, it's a lot of this work is collaboration driven, because there's so many application areas, and our team is only so big, and we kind of work with how we think the technology could benefit whatever client we're working with. And so definitely on the cultivated side, we see a lot of potential benefits there. But like anything, we just need some proof of concept and some testing. And so we're always open to those collaborations, with different folks. So we do a lot right now with the industry, but also academic groups as well too, where we can try and prove out, mechanism of action. We have collaborators that help us measure these bubbles, at the University of Illinois and University of Chicago. So there's a lot of things there we're pushing forward. So definitely open to that, because this space is so new and emerging. There's still a lot of questions to be answered.
It's certainly a very interesting product, and I am certainly going to be curious to sort of see it. Where it goes. So, I mean, thank you very much, Nick, for coming on the Future of Foods interviews. Just one more question before you go. I mean, what area do you think will be most exciting for this application? Which, if you had to choose one area of application, which one do you think it would be?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think personally, from what I've seen in it's not just because we're involved in the space, but in fermentation in general, like I'm really excited about how we can impact, microbiology and cellular growth. I think that's an area where this technology hasn't been used much before, and the benefits that we're seeing are really impressive. And I just think, again, with the growth of that space and with how many companies, again, beyond even food, but folks that are doing this to make pharmaceuticals or chemicals, enzymes, all kinds of stuff, that there's just so much potential. And once we really understand how to, continue to tailor this technology for different types of fermentation and really have those levers where we can maybe turn it on and off depending on what's going on. But I just see that whole space has tremendous upside. And that's what we're really excited about and focused on. And I think, you'll continue to see a lot of movement by us in the next year, certainly into that space. So yeah,
Yeah.
that's for me most exciting.
So hopefully, hopefully the Hydrosum technology will grow in line with the fresh agricultural revolution and precision fermentation and cultivated meat and the rest of it.
That's awesome.
So thank you
Yeah.
very
Yeah.
much, Nick, for coming on, and I hope to see your technology in the round. Thanks for coming on Future of Foods interviews.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Alex. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.